Welcome to the Calm Nights, Strong Days podcast. With over 30 years in the health and wellness industry, I've realized there's no one-size-fits-all solution for sleep and stress resilience. What affects one person's sleep and ability to handle stress is different for each of us. The stage of life you're in, work and home stressors, and more all affect how your body handles stress and your quality of life. Join me as we explore a variety of tools, strategies, and solutions I've employed with clients over the years in solo episodes, as well as insightful interviews and experts. Together, we'll unravel more pieces of the puzzle, empowering you on your journey to calm nights and strong days. So let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to the Calm Nights, Strong Days podcast. I am your host, Andy Clark. This is episode 53, where we're going to be diving into see if you know what makes you happy. And where this is stemming from is often I hear from clients, as well as a conversation that I had with my husband the other day, where they often say over time of long periods of stress that they don't feel that joy anymore. Some don't know what makes them happy anymore. What would excite them like it used to excite them? I know for me, like I used to go salsa dancing all the time. And just that freedom I felt on the dance floor was amazing. And to get that feeling back, I'm like, ooh, you know, what's that feeling again? Or that feeling I used to get in the gym, that adrenaline high, as I'd be lifting weights and, you know, just pushing hard and making gains in the gym, just all kinds of things that just used to, that I used to do that bring me a lot of joy. And so we get to these points where we either don't feel as much joy anymore. I know with me, with working out, there's been times where like my adrenals have been shot and I just couldn't even get my adrenaline up to even feel that high that I used to get in the gym. Like it just wasn't physically possible for me, even if mentally everything was good. There's times where, you know, you just have so much on your plate, you can't do things. There's so many reasons as to why we can get to the point where we don't feel happy anymore. We don't know what makes us happy. And I want to dive in with that today. So I have four different problems that I'm going to be going over with you. And we're going to dive into those. They're the top ones that I see, although there are others. And we're going to dive into them and see if you resonate with any of them. Because when we're at that point where we don't know what makes us happy, or we don't have time for things that make us happy, that ends up interrupting our sleep, interrupting our stress, and becomes this whole vicious cycle. And it's one that I hear with so many clients when I start working with them. And I mean, my husband and I literally were talking about this the other day, just even with him. I mean, the hours he has worked in the last few years has been unbelievable, that I am not surprised that he's saying to me, like, I don't even know what makes me happy anymore, right? Like he's just in that hamster wheel. So, which leads me to the first problem that I see with many of my clients is where there's no time for the things that you really like to do, the things that bring you joy, the things that make you happy, because you're kind of stuck in this hamster wheel. Life has kind of caught up with you. You have this career and you may have kids, you have commitments, you may have pets, and it's like this whole Groundhog Day on repeat, where you wake up, you know, get yourself ready, possibly get kids ready, get to work, do what you need to do at work, get home, get kids sorted, get dinner sorted, domestic duties, or maybe get back into work in the office and doing things, and you're back in bed, rinse and repeat constantly. And it seems like there is no time at all for you to do the things that you love to do. And that's where this week I was listening to a podcast, and it was fascinating. This was to do with business and social media, where somebody was asking a coach about social media. This is on George Bryant's podcast. And they're asking about social media, and he's like, "You do you. What works for you?" He said that he actually has a client that does not comment on posts. They post all their information on social media and they leave it there. They do not comment. And there was another one, I'm not sure. He said another one actually turns off their DMs. And one individual doesn't do the comments, but they do the DMs because that's where they find makes them happy and doesn't stress them out. They love that one-on-one interaction. And I sat back and went, "What? You can do that? I didn't know you could do that." I have been sitting here, and I know I do this in my business. We all do this in everything in life. We do this with our kids. We do this in our jobs. We do this in social, where it seems like we're waiting for permission to kind of adjust and change things so that they fit within our life. We almost put these pressures on us, these expectations that we feel others should be putting on us, where we're almost looking for outside validation or permission in order to do things. You know, we see that maybe kids are in all kinds of activities, and so we feel we should be putting our kids in all kinds of activities when, in fact, we may not have the time or bandwidth to do it, or our kids may not even have the time or bandwidth to do it. We may take on extra projects because we don't want to say no. This was a big one that my husband and I spoke about the other night as well. My husband is very specialized in what he does in his job. And as he was working into that specialty, he worked in some other of the areas around him as well. And where he works is short-staffed. And they're so short-staffed that often these other departments also need help. And so my husband, quite often there's extra events in the evenings, there's events on the weekends, 24 hours a day. He's a police officer, so it's things 24/7. And he's in like logistics and planning at like emergency management. There's always things happening. We're the most multicultural city in the world, that there's always something happening in our city where all of these departments are pulled in and reinforcements are needed. And he says yes. And I get it when somebody's in front of you and somebody is saying to you, "Hey, we're really stuck on this. We can help this." And you like the people, you like what they're asking you to do, you want to help. And you say yes. The thing is, as we have to often think of as well, is what are you saying no to? So when we say yes to something, we're often saying no to something else. And that's where my husband and I have been talking. And I'm like, "Yes, I absolutely get these people are short-staffed. I get that you really like them and you want to help them. And you also know that when they're short-staffed, like they're working ridiculous hours," which my husband is working as well, "and they're exhausted and tired. And you don't, and you want to help them because he understands the health issues involved in all of that." The thing is that he's saying no to extra time with our family, right? He's saying no to time for him to recover. He's saying no for time for him to do the things that he likes to do that bring him joy, which he had yesterday off, and he went and changed the tires in the car and the oil all by himself in both of our vehicles. And it made him feel good. It took him all day, but he was outside doing it. He felt productive doing something that actually made him happy. And he hasn't done that in so long. And so I am here to tell you that you have permission. You have permission to decide what it is that you say yes to, what it is that you say no to, by weighing them out. If I say yes to this, what am I saying no to? If I say no to this, what am I saying yes to? Ask yourself that question. And I'm giving you permission to think outside the box. Where can you trim some things in your day? Where can you stop being on that hamster wheel? Are there some things that you can politely decline at work? Are there activities that you can stop or slow down with your family or your kids? Are there social events that you know, can weigh out? And some of them absolutely bring you joy, fill your cup, you want to go to. But if there's ones that you just feel obligated to go to, but may not be filling your cup and being at home or relaxing or doing something else that you really would love to do, can fit in that spot, then go for it. Absolutely go for it. I mean, it can be simple, silly things, like I said, of not going into Facebook and commenting. Like, I don't have social media on my phone. I have a blocker on my computer, actually. I work from 9 until 12, Monday to Friday. My kids homeschool. Sometimes I step in to check on them, but my office time is Monday to Friday, 9 to 12. The afternoons I'm with my kids because I homeschool them. I am making sure that they're active, I'm active, things are getting done around the house. I have made those boundaries, but I have put app blockers. The one that I use currently is LeechBlock, on all of our computers. For me, all social media is blocked from it because I know that that sucks me in. It doesn't actually bring me joy because you're usually sucked into some things that are actually funny. But they don't truly make me happy at the end of the day, being sucked into other people's lives on there. And it takes away from my work and my ability to really focus. And if I'm done my work before 12, then I leave the office. You can do that. Well, I don't know if you could do that if you're working for an employer, but honestly, if your job is done, if your tasks of the day are done and they are done very well to the best of your ability, honestly, if there's somebody that's working for me and they get it done in that amount of time, I'm like, go for it. Take time for you. You deserve it. But it'll also help them bring more brain power, more focus into what they're doing the next day for me. And they will, as long as they're not cutting corners and being, you know, short-sighted with it, that's something that I believe we should do and allow them to do. And that's where I think there's so many expectations that we can sit back and think, is this really an expectation that has to be in my life right now? Is it one that's adding value? Is this one that I see? And that's where, when we're on that hamster wheel, taking that step back, figuring out, if you say yes to certain things that you keep saying yes to, what are you saying no to? Can you say no to certain things? What can you change to certain things? And what expectations have you put on yourself to do so many of those things when in reality, things can be done a different way? I love thinking outside of the box. And yes, not everybody is going to understand it or agree. And the thing is you don't even have to explain it to them. I've learned that with homeschooling. I can just say, hey, it's working for us. I don't have to explain all of the whys and the hows and the everything to help them feel better with my decision. My kids are happier. My son's anxiety, his depression. I was very fearful at one point what was going to happen to my son or what he was going to do to himself had he stayed in school. And so it's been a road and a journey to actually help him find his happiness, which is point number three, and I'll get into that one. And so I had to pull him from school, but that's really not anybody's business as to why. We don't have to explain to others our decisions on how we do it. If it works for us, if it works for our families, if it makes our life better and helps us find that happiness and joy, we don't need to explain it to anybody. It's ours. So you have full permission to think outside the box and find out what works for you. So the second thing, the second problem that I have found where we may not know what makes us happy is that our priorities have changed. So There's quite often where we have thought out a path for us, where we want things, what we want to do, how we want to do things. We want to have kids, and I want to have a career, and I want to do, still do all these other things in my life. And we realize once everything comes in, it may not work out that way. We may end up with a child like mine, where, sorry, I'm just looking over my shoulder. I'm going to close my door. May have a child of mine where it does take a lot more time and effort with one of them. My other child is a breeze. But the other child takes a lot more time, effort, energy in order to help him navigate his days so that he's okay and getting through them. And that does take away from some other plans that I did have, right? I don't work full time in my office anymore, as I just said. Once I had to pull my child from school, I had to reevaluate, readjust. It's fascinating. I get a lot of the same things done in the office now in a shorter period of time because I'm more focused and dialed in, but I'm also not worrying about my son as much now that he's home and he's working on things. So our priorities change. I remember it was a couple months ago, I was speaking with somebody who's in university, third year, and third year, they have to start choosing what they want to do after. Are they going for a master's? Are they going to be looking for co-ops? Are they going to be going into the workforce? And trying to plan that path of what they want to do, because that affects what they choose to do in their fourth year, what courses they're taking, what path they want to do. And so this individual I was speaking with was thinking that they had to plan their entire career path now. And I remember asking her, what makes you happy right now? When you think of what you would like to do in the next 2, 3, 5 years, what makes you happy? Is it this? She's in psychology. Is it being in a lab doing research? Is it working with clients one-on-one? Is it, building your own business and going out on your own? Like, what is it? Which directions? There were so many directions she could take. Is it going for her master's? What at this moment is calling to her? What at this moment is making her feel happy? Because everything's going to change. As she, I was like, where were you when you first came into university and wanted to do psychology versus now in 3 years? You've learned so much. You've grown. You've changed. You've had different experiences. You're in a different stage of life. You're also now seeing all of these other opportunities that are out there for you, and you can go and try them. Which one do you want to try first? Which one is calling for you to try now? Because once you get into it, you're also going to grow and change and adapt and see all of the other possibilities and things out there with that. You may find that what you've gotten into is perfect for you. You may find this is my calling, this is where I want to be, this is what makes me happy, but you also might find that what you thought it was going to be is going to be different. And we see this with career paths all of the time, where I know working with lawyers, I worked with so many lawyers downtown, and so many of them got into being a lawyer because they really wanted to fight for advocacy for people. And just so many values went into why they wanted to do what they wanted to do. The thing is the fact of once they got into being a lawyer, there's so much political to it. There is so much, like I had clients, depending on their specialty, that as soon as their clients needed them, day or night, 24/7, they had to be there. I called them like their beck and call people. So the reality was that often they had to put their life on hold when they were in a large case. Like they have to leave their family if they're in a courtroom and working a very, very large case, the stress and the tolls that it would put on them. There's so many different stories and different types of law that you see. That what their vision for it was not necessarily how they thought it would feel on their body, how it, the time that it would take from their families. And some of them loved it. Some of them thrived in getting into that area that they got into. And others, I saw some others that did end up leaving and going to smaller practice because that is where their heart and their passion was. My son as well, this is a huge, an amazing example with this. So Pokemon, my son plays, both my kids play the Pokemon card game. They're pretty good players. And they are like high level competition. So with Pokemon is you have your local tournaments that are just local tournaments, kids starting off playing, some kids starting to like get a little higher level. And then you start getting into higher level competition. And as you get into higher level competition, you're collecting points to go to worlds. It is such a brilliant business model as well, the way that Pokemon runs. And you have to constantly be changing out your decks every quarter when new cards come out, because decks that were strong, new cards come out that make other decks stronger to beat that deck. There's so much that goes on with this, and it just stimulates both my kids' brains amazingly. They love it. They love talking all the cards with their friends. Once we started getting higher level competition, my one son has a coach, one of the top three Canadian players who's like been in worlds many times, ranked high, like I think he got second internationals, all of this stuff. And he's been working on playing against more masters and working up his skill to be able to eventually possibly get, he can right now possibly get to worlds, but he wants to actually be really good in worlds. My other child is, I'm gonna say, possibly even a better player, kicks butt in tournaments, regionals. He got like 29th in regionals, his first regionals ever, never done any of these tournaments, like crazy. The thing is that as he started doing higher level competitions, as he started getting into these, he stopped finding the joy in it. It wasn't his happy place anymore. He found he was putting so much pressure on himself, which are things that he is working on, is competitiveness, losing, perfectionism, things like that. And it was really taking away from his game. And he stopped playing. He stopped hanging out with his friends as much. And so him and I sat down one day and I was like, okay, Pokemon used to be fun for you. When was it fun? What made it fun? What made it that you loved it? And he said that he loved it when it was just with his friends, just having fun, talking cards, hanging out, trading cards, and doing the odd like Thursday tournaments locally, which he kicks butt in, but it's with his friends having fun. And so we're like, okay, well, let's go back to that. Let's go back to when it made you happy. And so this is such a huge, important lesson that we can learn from my child, is that quite often we set these goals for ourselves and we have this image or this vision of what that is going to look like, what it is going to be, how it's going to feel. And we get those feelings at certain stages as we're going through those goals, but eventually we might get to the part where we're like, I don't have those feelings anymore. I don't have that happiness anymore, this joy in it. And you can scale back to where you want it to be. I know for me as well, I used to do group programs, but I missed the one-on-one interaction that I have brought my practice down back again, part-time, no more big group programs where people are getting lost in the masses, where I didn't feel I could really service people to the best of my ability. And I brought it back to one-on-one clients, which brings me so much joy. I am so much happier going diving deep with clients in one-on-one sessions, which brings me joy. And I love it in my practice. I look forward to every client that I have, every session that I have is one-on-one. Whereas when it was group, I was like, oh, how can I service? Or I'm missing these people. Or how can I was worried about asking certain questions in a group format because a lot of what I talk about is sensitive, vulnerable, deep stuff with people, asking them about their stressors. And so I knew that also people weren't able to, it wasn't a space where they could be vulnerable and open up as well. And I knew that and felt that I had to change it, even though, like, there are certain aspects of group programs that I loved. And so one day I may be able to bring in some of those aspects into group while still keeping the one-on-one portion to have that vulnerable, that space for people to be vulnerable, but also having that sense of community that I really did love in the group. I may bring that in again one day, but I'm going to do it the way that I feel that is best for my clients and my people, not the way another coach has laid it out in this is how you should do a group program, or the way that another coach actually does do it. The way that they do it may work for their client. And so I need to put my spin on it. And that's where I'm giving myself that permission to say no to certain things that I know don't work with my client and the way that I like to work with my client. And say yes to the things that will. So, thinking about all of these things in your life, think about work, think about home, think about the way you're doing things with your kids. Are there things that you are doing with your kids because of expectations that somebody else has kind of laid on you that you should be doing with them? Or, are you not? And that's as well another Pokemon thing is a lot of the kids that we do go to tournaments with and compete with are saving up for worlds. As I said, like my one son will get there one day. We have a lot of kids that are really working hard to get there now, and they're struggling to get their points and to get up into worlds and pushing really hard. And that's their thing. And when we go, they're like, "Where are your points at? How are you for worlds?" And we've made a decision in our family that we're not pushing for that right now. Even my one son, his goal may be to get to Worlds one day, but we don't even have a goal as to when that is. He's working at a pace that works for him at learning to be better and better in each of these local tournaments. And we have some of the top world players in Toronto, where I live. So they actually are already getting a taste of Worlds at all the tournaments that they get because some of those top players are there. And so only once they can really start beating those top players is when they're going to go to Worlds. And we've made that decision as a family. There's a time, there's a cost. Their dad doesn't have vacation in the summer when worlds are. So it'd be me taking them. It wouldn't be family vacation. And this year it's in Hawaii, which I mean, cost for all three of us to go to Hawaii, stay in Hawaii. There's a lot of other factors involved in it that we have decided, you know what? It's not for us and our family, but we fully support our friends who are, traveling all over North America to get their points in all of these tournaments in order to get there. So that's where we get to choose. What will make you happy? What will make your family happy? What will be some things, are a little disappointing at first. Like we were kind of like, hey, yeah, world sounds so cool. But then when we started really thinking about it, the cost, the time, and not being mentally ready yet or actually able, like, at a level yet in their card game to get there. So really evaluating with your job, where are you? Where are your priorities? Have your priorities changed as you've had your career path? Have your priorities changed with your family? Does a child have more needs than another? Do you have family that elderly, like your parents or something, that need more time and attention, and things need to be adjusted in other parts of your life? Have your priorities changed? And what can you change in those priorities to make you happy? So that was my second of these four problems. So the first one was no time for things that you like to do, evaluating your is it okay to say yes and no. And the other one is checking if your priorities have even changed. So, as with the first one, you have no time for things to do. Well, of those things that you do, have your priorities changed in them? Is there a way that you can shift and adjust them to actually get them back to where your happy place is? The third thing is that you don't know what makes you happy anymore. And this is a big one because we do get lost in the day-to-day. We do get lost in where our goals were and getting to those goals and realizing quite often, not quite often, but realizing that there are times where we're getting to our goals and we're reaching them that this isn't really what's making me happy anymore. I thought this would, but it's not. It's also losing touch of what makes you happy. And this was one of the things of pulling my son from school. And I see this a lot in schools. You'll learn about me that I don't do well with systems and people being in a box. And what I find with school is that the expectation is that all kids of the same age group are going to have the same learning styles. They're going to have the same interests. They're going to have the same passion for things, and that they should all just get along with each other just because they're the same age and they're in the same classroom. And they should all do the same things at the same time. Now, is this realistic at all with the way that the school system designed for me to say that kids should be learning different things at different times and all of that? No. But that's where also I have all these dreams of how the structure could change in a school system. But I do find it fascinating that, like, as adults, we all have different learning styles, the way that we learn, the way that we like to learn things. And as adults, when we have an interest in something, we can dive deep down a rabbit hole in things. But with kids, when they have an interest in something, we're like, oh, no, we're not studying that yet. Nope, you have to wait until grade four for that, or you have to wait till grade seven or high school to learn that. You can't learn that now. And I just find this so fascinating. So when I pulled my son from school, he honestly has no idea what his interests are. Pokemon is a big one. He absolutely loves Pokemon. And with Pokemon, through the buying and selling of trading cards, we have gotten into like the stock market game and learning how stock works and trends and buying things. And we've kind of been diving a little bit down that rabbit hole. But trying to find things that make him happy, but he doesn't know even what subjects he likes, because for the longest time as well, it's fascinating because he's a child that's very ahead academically in certain things. But he also struggles to write by hand. He can type on a computer. His brain works that way, but he can't, more than a sentence, he can write words, can't write paragraphs, big ideas. Some evaluations we've had, they said that it's because his brain actually goes so fast that his hand can't write as fast as his brain goes. And others, it is actually a processing struggle. It's dysgraphia, which falls under the same brackets as dyslexia. So dyslexia is reversing words and numbers. Dysgraphia is where you struggle to put words on paper, or get them out of onto like written format. And so he's felt stupid in class as well. He's felt like he can't do things because he can't write out problems the way that the teachers want them written out. Meanwhile, if you ask them, he can verbally do everything in his head and verbally tell you how he can do everything. So in school, he just felt stifled because he was never taught how to actually do things the way that his brain works. And he also was told what he had to do and when he had to do it, that he never had to think for himself, that I find with so many kids, they truly don't know what makes them happy. There are some that you know that are just so creative and out there and love it. But at the same time, in a classroom, sometimes that gets stifled where it's like, oh, you can't be that person right now. There's other kids that are just dancing and moving around or climbing, but they have to sit still in class. So parts of those pieces do get squashed a little bit as well. And we do lose that ability to find out what makes us happy. Right? That ability to even socialize, I find with schooling is fascinating because we're taught that in elementary, in, primary elementary, you need to find friends that you're in school with. And even actually going into university, because some kids will have these great outlets and stuff, people in university, but then they go to another town or something where their university friends are not to work. And they're like, how do I make friends now? And it's fascinating. Whereas with my kids, it's like, hey, where are your interests? Let's find friends that have your same interests and then let's ask them to do things. So my kids are actually learning to invite their own friends to hang out on the on weekends and days off. And we've learned we do lose a lot of these abilities through our schooling. And sometimes those aren't brought back. So we lose that ability to really figure out what makes us happy. Sometimes, like, we go to school, we go to college, we go to university, Then we get into our careers and we're just on this path in this box, and we don't ever really find out what makes us happy. We're just doing the things we need to do. So my third thing is is really finding out if you know what makes you happy. You may have known at one point in time. As I said, for me, salsa dancing, beach volleyball, listening to music, going for walks, one-on-one conversations. Those are things that make me happy. Not everybody knows what makes them happy. And so starting to find out, start asking yourself every day, what did I do today that made me happy? Or what can I do today to make me happy? And you will start noticing little things. It does not have to be big things, like putting on a song that you like, right? It is okay to do that. What are the small things that you can do that will make you happy? So those three things that I just spoke about, those three problems, those are a lot to do with like things in your environment, choices you're making, behaviors you're doing. A lot of the mental social side of things. And so my fourth thing is actually if something is physically going on in your body. And that's where we have tactical tools for these things. There's hormones, gut, sleep. I mean, if you're not sleeping, if you're not getting a good sleep, you're going to feel tanked. You're going to be tired. You're going to be less engaged with people, less wanting to socially interact with people. You're going to pull yourself away. You're probably going to be angry and moody. And that is definitely going to take away from you being happy in anything that you're doing. So sleep is a huge physical one. If you do have a lot of stressors on your plate. Now, as we talked about before, some of those stressors you can take off because they're stressors we put on ourselves, thinking we should be doing them when we don't have to be. We can also be talking about hormones, menopause, perimenopause. Perimenopause can happen for 10 years. You can be 40, 41, 42, and perimenopause starts hitting where your hormones are already starting to dip in certain parts and sway in certain parts. And you may not even realize that you're in that, but when your hormones are off, it can decrease your joy, your feeling of engagement and socializing and wanting to be around people. So that's definitely something to look into as well. And gut health, your hormones, many of your hormones, you have 50 different hormone responses that run through your body. And some of those are like social engagement, happy moods, all of these. And serotonin is a big one. Serotonin is your happy, I feel good, I'm engaged hormone. There's different studies I've read. Anything between 70 to 90% of your serotonin is released in your gut, is created and released in your gut. Only 10 to 20-ish percent is in your brain. So when you're on anti-anxiety meds, antidepressants, those are synthetic serotonin, which is quite often where we start looking at your gut, looking at your hormones, and starting to see like where are your serotonin levels at? I don't know how to check. Wait, hold on. Does the Dutch test do serotonin? I'm not sure if the Dutch test does do a serotonin. But if you are feeling, not really engaged, you're feeling a little low, or you're on anti-anxiety or antidepressant meds, if you are feeling slightly depressed or feeling like joy is lacking in things, and you have gut issues, if you feel indigestion sometimes or an upset stomach, or you may be feeling like acid reflux, you may feel like foods don't break down the way they used to, you may have constipation, you may have diarrhea, gut issues. If you're starting to have gut issues and you're not feeling joy in things, I would definitely start wondering where your serotonin's at. And your other hormones as well. You have other hormones that bring you joy, give you energy, get you pumped up. Those things decrease with long-term stress. So there's that physical side in the body. Now, this is where I always talk about there being so many pieces to the puzzle, because you may have all of these problems that I've stated, and you may have more, right? The thing is, as well, is one can exacerbate the other. You're in a hamster wheel, not stopping, constantly pushing, having a lot of stress, not getting your sleep. That can throw off your hormones and it can throw off your gut. Definitely. And the thing is that you can start getting those things back on track. You can start, saying no to some things. You can making different choices. You can start finding things that give you joy in your life again. And it decreases the hit on your gut, on your hormones, on your nervous system, on your stress system. It decreases the hit on it, but we have to repair the damage that's done to it. So you may be doing all the things that we've talked about and still not be feeling that joy. That's when we really need to go in and start looking at how taxed has your stress system been. And you're out of that stress state now. If you've been implementing the things and you're out of that stress state now, but you're still struggling, then we're like, okay, now we need to really start healing, repairing the gut, the sleep, your hormones, your nervous system, realigning everything to do with your stress system, get it stronger again to be able to handle things. So it's this vicious cycle. There's not one piece to this puzzle. It's not going to be one of the problems that I said. And as I'm saying things, you can be saying to yourself, oh, you've missed a problem. There's something you've missed. And I absolutely have, for sure. There's other things that I could be diving into, which would make this podcast way too long. My hope from this is for you to see that if you are starting to feel that lack of joy, or you're feeling like, oh, this is the thing too, like in workouts, if your workouts aren't bringing that adrenaline rush they used to, I would definitely start looking into like sleep gut hormones. If you're doing things that really used to bring you joy, if you go back to salsa dancing and it doesn't bring you that peace that it used to bring you, then that's where I would start definitely looking into these hormones, gut and sleep. But it's important to really be thinking about all of these pieces of the puzzle. We can also start diving into parts, as I've spoken of before. That's where I'll get into. Oh, is there a part that's not allowing you to say no to things? Is there a part that has all of these expectations that you need to do all of these things with your kids all of the time, no matter how much it burns you out? Is there a part that says like that you have to be cooking all of your meals and have your house like to this perfect cleanliness expectation? Are there parts that are interfering as well? Like there's so many pieces of this puzzle that it's really important for you to start observing, to know that it is okay to say no to things. And it's okay to say yes to things, even if it means no to other things, as long as you're weighing out those choices and decisions. And the thing is that you would have a lot less stress if you listened to what your body needed. Now that you're starting to understand that, start listening to your body, start listening to what goes on in your mind, what chatter goes on in your mind, what parts are saying when you are trying to say no to something. Are there parts that are rearing their head and going, nope, but you can't because of this? Start listening to what your parts are saying. Start listening to what choices you're making. And know that you have permission to change things up, to be outside of that box, to do the things that make you happy, to do the things that work for your life, for your family, even if they don't for somebody else and not everybody gets it. You do not need to explain to anybody else your choices that work for you, that work for your family, and bring you joy. Be unapologetically you. It is okay if not everyone gets you. All right. Sending you lots of love. Know that finding that joy is a big piece to the puzzle of calm nights and strong days. I will see you in the next episode. Wait, before you go, if you found this podcast valuable, please consider liking and subscribing. Your support helps others discover these insights too. And if you're ready to transform your sleep and stress management, I would like to see if we are a good fit with one another. Let's chat. The link to my calendar is in the show notes below. Let's connect and start your journey to calm nights and strong days now. Until next time, sleep peacefully and stay resilient.